Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox. Members FDIC.
The White Sox Talk Podcast is brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs from coast to coast. For more information, go to their special White Sox webpage. It's www.wintrust.com/Sox. Chuck Garfine here with Ryan McGuffey. And Guff, you can never have enough talent. But the White Sox, they've got a slew, quite possibly a surplus of minor league outfielders. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and it's, you almost forget when you're actually listing them, you're either writing them down or trying to name them, you always forget one or two or three big names. You're like, oh my God. You know, I forget that. We're coming up with questions for Aaron Rowan. It's like, hey, I'm going to ask this about this guy. I'm going to ask about this guy. And you're like, we're both like, oh my God, how did I forget that? Because there's so much talent and from all areas of you know, the system, from AAA all the way down.
The Kannapolis. So because there is so much talent, we wanted to talk to a guy who has seen them all and is working with all of them, and that is Aaron Rowan. You said his name. And so we got him on the phone, and, well, boy, a lot of good stuff in here.
I mean, Rowan always brings it.
Eloy Jimenez.
Yeah.
Luis Robert. Steel Walker. What he says about Steel Walker.
It's funny. I haven't met Steel Walker.
I met him once.
And, you know, I guess now I feel like he's the one player like I need to meet the most.
I think you do.
You know, just the way Aaron describes him kind of feels like it's a McGuffey player.
He is a McGuffey player. Oh, yeah. Is he a McGuffey player?
Yeah.
There's a surprise Mike Rodolfo discussion or answer that he gave.
Very surprised.
Yeah, that you're going to hear stuff on Alex Call and Nick Madrigal, even though he's not an outfielder. White Sox fans, when you hear what Aaron Rowan says about Nick Madrigal, you're going to want to, I guess, run to where? To buy season tickets or run to Nick Madrigal's house.
It sounds like he might be like one guy who's actually eligible to be an old school player, meaning he could be player coach.
Yeah,
that's
the
brain that he has. He's like a 22-year-old kid with like a 42-year-old brain.
Yeah.
You know what? That makes sense.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes sense.
I think actually,
it does in the answer.
And what I meant to say was maybe buy a Nick Madrigal jersey. This may not want lead you to buy season tickets or go stalk him and try to find him and say hello to him. It's more of, hey, I want this guy's jersey because he is special.
The more you read and hear about the guy, you're like, how did he even fall to them?
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, how did he not go number one? I know Casey Mize went number one, but he seems to be the all-around deal.
All right, so here on the podcast, we've got our conversation with Aaron Rowan, and we are debuting the new intro and music to the podcast. I labored on this for hours, days.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Chuck. It's a hat tip right here because it reminds me, and I told you this, it reminds me of the old White Sox montage that led into Thunderstruck, that like when you went to a White Sox game, you needed to make sure you were in your seat by like 7:04 because if you wanted to see 7:10's first pitch, you had to see the montage.
This was what I was going for. Not that specifically, but I wanted you guys listening to be fired up. And not just be fired up and ready for the podcast, but I wanted there to be kind of a little bit of a history there as well. Because we're into the history of this franchise, and we are kind of seeing, we saw it kind of, without giving anything away, saw it kind of transpire last season.
Yeah, and quite frankly, people should be fired up because I really personally believe that this thing has bottomed out and now it's time to start climbing the rungs of the ladder. And I'm not saying they're going to go all the way to the top in 2019. Don't put words in my mouth. But it's time to start getting excited because these names that we've been talking about for over 2 years now are here. Some of them are here and some of them are knocking on the door and there's guys knocking on the door behind them. And it's real, folks. You should be excited.
All right. So here is the new intro, the new music, and our conversation with Aaron Rowan on the White Sox Talk Podcast. Let's do it.
White Sox, go, White Sox.
That ball hit deep, way
Contreras has put the White Sox ahead.
Jimenez leaves the ballpark. You can't put it on the board. Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
All right, on the phone, it is White Sox iconic outfielder. I just called you an icon there, Aaron. What do you think about that?
I don't know about that.
You are a World Series champ. That goes a long way in White Soxville. So I'm calling you iconic.
I hear you.
And you are currently the base running and outfielder instructor of the minor leagues. And so you have had a front row seat to so many of these young outfielders in the system. How would you describe the outfield talent, the overall just picture of the prospects and their talent level that you're working with in the minor league system right now?
It's outstanding. I mean, as far as outfielders go, I'd challenge you to find another organization with as much talent in the outfield in their minor league system. I mean, there's just, whether it be through draft or trade, we wound up with a whole lot of guys.
Yeah, you can go through – I mean, we could start with Eloy Jimenez, and you can go another 10, 12 players deep, and you're still – it's almost like jaw-dropping when you look at the names, you look at the talent, you see the depth the organization has. Is this the most impressive amount of talent and depth that you've seen it? I mean, you've been a part of multiple organizations, and you've spent a lot of time in the White Sox organization, but – in terms of actual overall talent, to see where these guys and what their ceilings might be, is this the best you've ever seen?
Oh, hands down, for sure. Just so many guys, high-round draft picks, obviously trades and stuff. I mean, like you said, you can go up and down the list of people, and that's at all levels.
But you can only start three in the major leagues.
Yeah, no.
What kind of logjam is there going to be? I don't want to say it's an embarrassment of riches yet, but maybe it might become that because you don't know how many of these guys are going to reach their potential. Do you believe? How many guys do you think could reach their potential and have the ability to make it to the majors and excel there?
There's quite a few of them. I mean, all the guys we have are not only physically talented and physically gifted, but mentally as well. And when you put those things together and to see some of the guys these last few years who have evolved into those kind of prospects and the guys that we've drafted or gotten in trades that already have that, both of those things, I mean, it just takes time and sheer number of at-bats to let these guys, learn how to hit and learn how to play the outfield, not just physically, but mentally. It's, I wouldn't say it's a no-brainer, but there's a lot of guys who have the opportunity to be impact players at the major league level.
We want to talk to you about a lot of guys. Let's just start at the top, and that's Eloy Jimenez. The reason why go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think what's holding him back on the baseball field would be, they say, his defense. Where is his defense right now?
Well, I'd say this last year it improved tremendously, especially towards the end of the year. And, he's had some injury issues, like in spring training and here and there. But the biggest thing is, I think, for him was his footwork. And when you have a bigger guy like Eloy, sometimes that takes a little bit longer to come through than for, a short, quick guy or a speed guy. But this last year, especially the second half of the season, he looked a lot more comfortable and was getting better jumps and reads on balls. It's just going to continue to get better. I mean, you can compare him to somebody like Abascal, big guy, has decent speed. But just those big-bodied guys, when Avi was a younger player, he was a little bit clunky with his feet. The jumps and the reads and stuff weren't as quick as they are now. And he's turned himself into a really, really good outfielder. And Eloy has that ability to get better. And there's a higher ceiling in his outfield play than where he's at right now. It's just going to be continuing to work.
Speaking of Eloy, last week I read something from you that you said his motivation to be great is what is going to make him great. Can you elaborate on that? Because, you know, some guys rely a lot on their talent. When they get to the major league level, they don't have maybe that extra gear or that extra motivation, as you said. But can you elaborate on what is going to make Eloy Jimenez different than maybe, you know, just the average major league baseball outfielder?
Well, I think his, you know, especially offensively and defensively as well, because, you know, and I asked him point blank, I said, you know, you're already a great hitter, and I know you want to be better, but do you think you can elevate your outfield game? And he said, I want to be a great outfielder. And I said, that's what I wanted to hear. And, you know, we got a lot of work done this year. I think the thing that's going to make him great is that he goes to the field every day trying to excel, trying to get better every day. And he puts his work in, especially in the batting cage and then during BP. He puts his work in to try to become better. He's not just doing it because he has to do it. He does it because he wants to be the best on the baseball field every day. He's got, it's almost like he plays with a chip on his shoulder, but that's, I mean, he knows how good he is, especially at the plate. But some people that have that kind of talent are content with that talent. And he wants to get better every day. So I think those are some of the qualities that separate players from other players.
How good is he going to be in the major leagues?
I think he's going to be a heck of an outfielder. And I mean, he's got the talent level and the mental makeup and the maturity in his approach to be a superstar. I mean, he's got that in him. I mean, I'm not going to label him as anything or compare him to anybody because he still has to go and do it. But the talent level and the mental maturity of his at-bats and his makeup mentally is off the charts.
Luis Robert, we didn't get to see too much of him. He only played 50 games because he had a couple of thumb strains. What is he learning? How is he developing? Because obviously it was a shortened season for him, and he's in the Arizona Fall League now. He's got some extra at-bats and extra games for him. But where is he right now? Because this was such an abbreviated season for him.
Well, it's really tough to judge how much progress he made this year in the short amount of time that he got to play. But, I mean, I know that in the time that he did play, he played very well. He's gotten even better in the outfield and on the bases through the experiences that he's had. And he's a dynamic guy, man. I don't even know if people know where his ceiling is yet.
So you want to elaborate on that, actually? Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, it's obvious his tools. I mean, he's got off-the-chart tools, I mean, in every aspect, throwing, hitting, defense, hitting for power, speed. He's what, when people talk about five-tool players, he's the epitome of that.
Does he have the sixth tool, which is the mental part of it?
Yes, and that is, I think, he's another one like Eloy, and they were really good for each other this spring, playing together and hung out together, talk a lot together. He's got that chip on his shoulder, that drive. He comes to work every day, and takes it seriously. He takes learning English very seriously. He's not another guy. He's not a guy that just comes and has that kind of talent either. He comes out every day to try to prove that he's the best one out on that field. And It's pretty impressive. When he's healthy, it's pretty impressive to watch what he can do.
All I know is every time I see a clip of him and he's running, it looks like it's in fast forward to me because the guy, it's literally a blur.
He's gliding in
the air. It really is. I mean, the speed is off the charts. But you guys had 21 of the top 30 prospects in the organization down in Arizona last week. And I read a lot about the culture and the bonding. And I think Chris Getz had some of the catered Olive Garden breadsticks in for a night or something like that. But I reached out to Zach Collins and I asked him to pick out one thing that really stood out last week. And I told him we were going to do a podcast with you. And the one thing he talked about was that culture. And he said, I thought it was really cool how the player development staff and front office brought together a core group of guys that were all able to bond and just hang out for a couple of days without having any baseball worries going on. Can you talk about how the culture, what you guys are implementing to these players at such a young age, 19, 20, 21 years old, so when they do make the major leagues, that they've had a taste of what to expect kind of off the field and how to like each other? Because that seems so easy that you should just get up and 25 guys all mesh together, but it's not that simple.
No, it's not that simple, especially in professional baseball when one of those guys that you're supposed to mesh with is trying to take your job. He's trying to get to the same spot you are, and that's Major League Baseball. So trying to take the egos out of it and teach a winning culture, a bonding culture, a culture of guys who all play with a chip on their shoulder and do it together as a team. You want to try to produce a core group of guys who come through the system together that hopefully, in a perfect world, are all going to play in Major League Baseball with each other and together, because that kind of team dynamic is what players feed off of from each other. So to have a group of guys who have played together for quite a while and then get to play together in the big leagues together, that was one of the things that made our team with Chicago so unique. The year we did win, and having played with a lot of those guys for a long time and even in the minor league, that's the kind of culture that I think our whole player development staff is going for. And I thought it was a great idea to have those guys out there for that and bring them together and have some of the younger guys who just got done with their first half season or just their first full season sit down and talk with some of the older guys and have them share their experiences with them and pitfalls of what to look for and what you want to try to accomplish and hear it from other players. That's big. Not coming from an instructor who has gone through it, but coming from your peers, it means a lot.
Is there a young outfielder that reminds you of yourself in a way, if not the way you played, your personality or how you approach the game?
I would say, yeah, there's a few guys out here that I look at and see the look in their eye and the way that they play the game makes me proud to be their instructor, because it's similar to the way I played. And one that sticks out right off the bat is Alex Call. Another guy, Tyler Frost. I mean, there's some really, really cool to be able to work with kind of guys out in our minor league system. And those two kind of stand out right off the top of my head. But they're both going to be good players. Alex finally had a season where he didn't get hurt this year and got to play a full season and did well. And Tyler Frost, who was in Kannapolis this year, hit 18 home runs and played the heck out of all three outfield positions.
What about Steele Walker? Because he's somebody who said, he quoted last week, Aaron Rowan is an absolute legend when it comes to what he knows in the outfield. And he seems like one of those guys that Chicago is going to kind of fall in love with when he gets here.
There's no doubt. And he would be another guy in that same group. And I mean, to be able to spend time with him and watch the attention to detail that he puts into his work in the outfield and in his hitting and trying to learn from anybody that he can instructor-wise to try to become that better player. He's another guy who goes out there, and when it's game time, man, he's out there to cut your throat. He's trying to be the best player on the field too, and I love his attitude. He's got a fun-loving attitude. He's a heck of a player. He's gonna be another good one that, like, I agree with you 100%. I think Chicago is going to fall in love with when he gets there.
Yeah, he's got something about his personality, a flair, a confidence, a bravado, but also, like, he's not intense. He's just kind of a fun guy, right? Is that how you would describe him? How would you describe him?
No, his intensity on the field is second to none compared to anybody else that you would try to compare with. But off the field, like you said, he's kind of got that flair to him, but he's kind of a goofball too. And all of his teammates love him. All the instructors love him. I'm lucky enough to get to work with him every day. And I don't know. He's always got a smile on his face. He's out there to work, but he knows how to have a good time and laugh and joke when the time's right. And so he brings a lot of laughter and a lot of fun and excitement to all the drills and all the games and everything that he's a part of.
There was one guy that stood out, or at least going into the 2018 season, that I was kind of looking forward to seeing because he had some injury issues after the White Sox acquired him, was Blake Rutherford. And, you know, what a season he had. I mean, 293, 345, 436. He had 41 extra base hits, 78 RBI, 15 stolen bases. He's back in those top 75 of the top prospects in the game. He just seems like one of those guys that every time you look at the box score, he has an outfield assist and he's 2 for 5 with an extra base hit. And he's a left-handed bat. There's a lot to love about it. What about Blake Rutherford? What about his skill set sets him apart? You know, I know we're trying to break down each guy like they have a future in this organization. And as Chuck said at the top, you know, there's only three spots. But Blake Rutherford sure looks like he's going to be one hell of a major league player.
Yeah, the thing that impressed me the most about Rutt this year is he finally figured out his routine. So it's his second full year in pro ball, and being a high school draft guy that we got from the Yankees, I think the first half season that he got here after the trade, you know, he's kind of a quiet guy. He was a little bit trying to get his feet wet around a bunch of new teammates after, I'm sure, he finally just learned all the people in the Yankees organization. So he gets traded over here, and now he's got to kind of feel his way around with all new teammates, coaches, everything else. And this year, he finally opened up a little bit more, looked like he was a lot more comfortable coming into the season after Instructional League last year. And if you ask him, he'll tell you too. He's finally got his own routine down every day. So the thing that probably impressed me the most about his season was his consistency.
Yeah.
And there wasn't ups and downs. He's probably one of the most consistent hitters in our organization all year. And the power potential's there that he hasn't even truly tapped into yet. He's a plus defender, got a good arm. He's smart. For a young kid, he's very, very mature and picks things up fairly quickly. And I think he's a guy who in a few years you might see up there, if not with us, with somebody else. But he's got a great future ahead of him, and he's got the ability to be an average kind of hitter along with the power. So he's got a lot going on his side, especially being a left-handed bat.
And he just works out with some guy in the offseason named Christian Yelich. So that'll make fans raise their eyebrows a little bit.
Yeah,
that doesn't hurt to have Christian Yelich hitting with you because, again, not coming from coaches but your peers and having a guy like that who you can bounce ideas off of and help him, like I said, get in that routine, that mental routine, and do the tee work or the flips that he does every day to get him ready to play the game that day. I'm sure that the reason that he got into that a little bit quicker than he probably would have is because of working out with Yelich and then talking, bouncing ideas off each other.
Yeah, it'd be like me working with Bob Costas on sportscasting. You know,
you're only gonna get better.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick up some things from Bob Costas that's gonna make me a better sportscaster.
What would Bob Costas get from you?
Nothing. He'd get nothing from me. I would just be picking his brain. I want to move on to Luis Gonzalez. We have so many outfielders I want to ask you about. I'm sure Guff's got a bunch too. You spent a lot of time with him last fall on his defense. So where is his defense from where it was last fall to this year?
Oh man, he's come a long way, and he communicates more out there. He runs the outfield defense from center field a lot better. He's in tune with the game more. He's reading swings and bat angles, and his routes have gotten a ton better. He puts his head down and goes. Defensively, he's one of the top guys that we have in this organization, and that doesn't even speak to his offense. And he's got something working right now. He's down here in instructional league, every time he goes to the plate, you feel like he's going to hit a rocket somewhere. And he's an even keel kind of guy. He doesn't ride the emotional waves of taking an offer or get too high when he gets a few hits one day. He's just level-headed and again, another guy who's just very consistent.
Wait, so you said that his outfield is right now the best in the organization, you feel, in the minor league system?
No, he's one of the top outfielders defensively in our organization.
Okay.
All right, so if I ask you this question here, not named Eloy Jimenez, and obviously there's so much attention paid on Eloy and Kopech, and I think the White Sox fans, and just there's been so much investment into this rebuild, and we're asking you about players that 12 years ago, when you rode the White Sox, no one really looked down at the top 25 prospects.
Yes. Sorry, Aaron, I wasn't following your minor league career.
Right. Well, there's a lot more media now.
Yeah.
That's true, too.
I mean, that's true. These games, you can find them on TV.
There's more access to this information.
If I had to say pick one guy, who's one player you might think, a position player that's not named Eloy Jimenez, that wouldn't surprise you if they were called up in 2019?
A position player or outfielder?
Outfielder, yeah. Let's go.
If you have an outfielder, yes. If not, position consistent. Player.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever you got.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of everybody. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, let me think. I'm trying to think of outfielders. Because at the higher levels, obviously, a lot of those guys already got called up.
Yeah.
I guess you could say if he had another year like he did this year offensively, you might see maybe a Mike Rodolfo get an opportunity in September just to be there as an outfielder. Because he had a great year in Winston-Salem this year and projects to be in Birmingham next year. And you never know in September. But, I would say of the outfielders, he's probably one of the closer ones just because he got so many more at-bats than a Louis Robert. And they both play at the same level. So
when I see go ahead.
No, I would say he would be the one.
Yeah, when I see him.
That would have a chance.
Yeah, when I see him at the plate. I mean, is there anyone physically as big as him? I don't know if there is in the minor leagues.
I don't think so. he's a monster. And he's got – I know he had surgery and whatnot, but, a lot of these pitchers come back throwing harder, and if this guy comes back throwing harder, he might have the best arm in the history of the game.
I know, it's almost not fair. He had this great arm, and now they're going to improve it?
Yeah, well, you always see pitchers come back, and they're like 2 or 3 miles an hour fast. They're throwing harder.
Where is he at?
He had an 80 arm as it started.
Yeah, I know. Is he down there now with you?
He was down here working out and going through his rehab stuff.
Yeah, so
he's not doing any baseball activity. He's just doing his rehab rehab stuff.
When can he start throwing a baseball? Do you know?
Ooh, that I don't know. I've never had Tommy John, but they usually say just at least like starting. I think it's, don't quote me because I'm not a trainer, but I want to say it's like 6 months,
seven months,
something like that.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm trying to do the math in my head. He had the surgery in what, July?
I think July.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So spring training, I mean, he'll be
fine. Best spring training, something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I guess what I've heard is he should be able to be hitting and playing as a DH again like he was when spring training comes around, but will not be back on defense probably until around the same time, calendar year maybe 11 months, 12 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any other outfielder we didn't bring up to you that you wanted to talk about that has impressed you? Because I got a couple other questions I wanted to ask outside of that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got guys out there that people don't know, well, maybe don't know a lot about, but there is the Alex Calls, the Tyler Frost, we got a new outfielder this year, a high school guy in Cabrera Weaver, who has been very impressive down here in instructional league. Young kid, speed guy, with a good arm, center field guy. He's got an opportunity. If we can keep Tito Polo healthy, he's got an opportunity. He's got all the tools too. We just got to keep him healthy.
And he's got the name.
He's got the name. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
Oh, Luis Basabe. I want to bring him up.
There's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another one.
Where is his defense right now? Is he major league ready as a defender? We know where his hitting's at. How about his defense?
Yeah, he's a major league defender already. He's another guy. He's up there in that group of top defensive outfielders.
Yeah. All right, so my other question was about your cuz, James Shields.
Right.
So impressed with the season he put together here, how he, like, reinvented himself. I actually have him as the team MVP this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, for what he did, what he meant to the team, the innings he put together. He didn't get the wins, obviously. He didn't have a lot of offense behind him. But what was it like to see your cousin, someone who you're so close with? You know, he went through a rough stretch for 2 years, you know, when he came over here. And then just to take those arrows and kind of change the course, the trajectory of his career at 36 years old as a pitcher and throw 200 innings. What was it like just to witness and see and know what was going on behind? What was going on behind the scenes with him to make this happen?
No, I think it's just hard work, man. He works as hard as anybody in the game. And there's a reason that he got back to throwing 200 innings. And I think a lot has to be said for Coop and Jamie working together. I know that there was a point where he dropped his arm spot a little bit and worked on that and getting a little bit more movement on some of his pitches. That's the beauty of pitchers. They can reinvent themselves. Position players, once you're out, you're out. But I'm proud of him. And I think what he did this year is just a testament to his hard work and what he brings to that team in the clubhouse. It's tremendous. He's one of the leaders in there and if not the leader. And He brings a lot on and off the field.
We speak so much about, you know, what you've seen there at the minor league level. But speaking of the major league team and looking at the outfield, do you see someone in that outfield, the current outfield right now at the major league level, that could play a role when this thing is set to take off, whether it be 2020, 2021, or you know, whatever year you want to stamp it? Is there someone here that you think could play a role in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think, you know, what Adam brings defensively is tremendous. I mean, you've always got room for a guy that can do that. And I think Nicky Delmonico's bat, and still being a young player, brings a lot to the table. And I mean, obviously with Avi, Avi is a major league veteran, all-star, whatnot. But in a few years, the only question mark you have is how much money is he going to be being paid? So, I mean, you got to look at the business side of it too.
Yeah.
But Avi's not too old that he couldn't also be a part of it when some of these guys start getting called up. It just depends on, obviously, how much money he's making and
if they change,
on the business side of it.
Yeah, if they change the rules of the game where you can have six outfielders.
Right. We're going to have to put some of them in the infield.
I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, Aaron, because you've got a surplus of outfielders who look like they can really be bona fide major league outfielders, and there's only so many spots, right?
Yeah, as an organization, that's a good problem to have. And, you know, it only brings other pieces to the puzzle that you're trying to put together, whether, you know, through trade or whatever. If you have a commodity of guys like this, that as they get ready to go, other teams look at and go, and then you can identify some of the pieces to your puzzle that you need to do to try to put that team over the top. I mean, you've got a lot of legitimate pieces, whether it be for the Chicago White Sox or somebody else, that could bring a lot of value in a trade.
All right, on a completely unrelated note, because we have you, and it is the postseason, and we're just a few days shy of the 13-year anniversary of AJ's drop third strike. Where would you rank that, what seemed to be a ridiculous play in the moment in White Sox history? Where would you rank that play?
Oh, man, I don't even know. It's got to be up there, though. And the thing is, only AJ would have thought of doing it.
That's true.
So, I mean, it definitely helped shift the momentum for that series and you know, the rest is history.
He had one last question. He's had an amazing, and still has, an amazing baseball mind, a prolific baseball mind. Is there someone in the minor league system who you've worked with who, I'm not saying has AJ's baseball mind, but has that kind of brain that is like a chess player? He sees what other guys don't.
I would say the first one that came to my mind, and it jumps out at you even after having only seen him a little bit, is Nick Madrigal. I mean, he's about as focused and detailed. He doesn't react to the play as much as he's already thinking a pitch or two ahead. And he just has such a feel for the game, for being, I mean, obviously he went to a great college program and he's a little bit older than, say, a high school guy. He sees things before they happen and it's already processed in his mind. So he was the first one that, when you said that, it jumped out at me.
That's what everyone seems to say too about him. Same thing. He's got that thing, that brain of his that can, do wonders on a baseball field because it's quicker than everybody else's. And like, what do you see? Or what has he said something to you, or did you see him do something that the light went on in your mind about what he can see and think?
Well, I saw it in the first game I saw him this year when he went to Kannapolis. And there are, you just watch the game and you know, for some people they react to the ball and react in the moment. But when you see him moving with pitch counts and you see him positioning himself certain ways, first swing he took in a Kannapolis uniform was a 3-1 fastball middle in, and he had a line drive over the second baseman's head. And I don't know, just talking with him and the questions that he asks are not typical of somebody in his first year in pro ball. And he's just ahead of the curve when it comes to the mental side of the game, and talking with him about hitting approaches and talking with him about certain things. Like the other day he asked me how many percentage of people in Major League Baseball you think wear a thumb guard, like when they hit. And I'm like, I don't know. But, I mean, he just comes out of left field with some of those things. But that's just the way he thinks, and that's the game. Like, his movements on the field, it just looks like they're already anticipated. It's not a reaction in the moment.
When I see him, I'm going to ask him that question. Maybe he'll have the answer by then. I'll be like, hey, how many? I'm just curious. What do you think?
Thumb guards. He'll probably already have something ahead of. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
He probably did
a toe
like a
guard or something.
Hey, Aaron, thank you so much. You know, you always deliver with great wisdom, and White Sox fans are going to love this. Hearing what you had to say about all these outfielders and players in the system, it's exciting stuff, and we appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron.
No problem.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your night. We'll talk to you soon. All right, Aaron Rowand. He didn't bat 1,000 in his major league career, but you get him on the podcast, and he's batting 1,000. He always brings it, and good stuff there from him.
Yeah, I love it, too, because he's so passionate. And, you know, he was passionate as a player, and he's passionate about what he does now with the organization, and he's passionate about the guys we asked him about. And I, like, every time I was making a mental note, I'm like, oh, that stands out. We'll talk about that. That stands out. We'll talk about that. I realized I just kept doing it because every player he mentions, there's some little nugget you pull. And you're like, I mean, the Mike Rodolfo thing, quite frankly, that surprised me.
Yeah.
To think that he could be now, it doesn't surprise me because of his talent, just because of the injury.
Yeah.
But he's right. You know, position players come back from Tommy John as a bat sooner than pitchers.
The thing he needed to, the thing he needed to work on more was his hitting last year, not his defense, not his arm. His arm's incredible.
Yeah.
So that would make sense. You saw what he did offensively. He actually had a pretty good OBP, had a lot of power. I mean, the guy's just a beast.
He's a freak.
He's
you and I have stood next to him, and it's uncomfortable.
He looks like he should be playing in the NFL as a wide receiver or tight end.
I mean, he fits like Aloy's tall, but he just has a different, like, he's just one of those physical specimens. I'm talking about Adolfo here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, kind of like Robert. I mean, he's a physical specimen too, but when the three of them are standing by, the one that you keep kind of like gravitating towards is Adolfo.
Yeah.
And that sounds crazy.
Yeah. Adolfo's not as tall as Aloy. Jimenez.
Yeah, he's not.
But he's just cut.
He is.
Like an
like
NFL
a football
guy.
Player, yeah.
The stuff he said about Call was great. Jimenez, we knew he was going to rave about Jimenez.
Rutherford.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds to me like
at some point there's going to be some trades made.
Yeah, and he even alludes to it.
Yeah.
I think you want there to be trades made. That's the you want there to be so much depth and competition and talent that there isn't room for all of these guys. And so a guy you acquired as the third player, and I'm just using Bisabi here as an example. The third player in the Chris Sale deal could now be a premium player to acquire a premium player in another organization.
Yeah, yeah.
That is player development, folks.
Right, right. And I do want to keep at least some of them because the problem, of course. But what I mean by
they're
that.
Not all going to pan out.
Well, not only, and someone might get hurt. And then what they talk about with this organizational depth, outfielder A gets hurt. Well, let's go get outfielder G or F, who's in AAA, who might be just as good, if not better. We can bring him up as opposed to, now the season is over because we lost this guy.
That's the one thing the White Sox have lacked for 15 years
is
organizational depth. And they've just made that a promise to each other in the system, in the organization, that will no longer be a problem. And the outfield is the one spot. We've named 12 or 13 players. So if they trade five of them, there's seven or eight left.
Yeah.
And the one thing that Rick Hahn, the one group of players he talked about in his end of season press conference in terms of free agency that, don't expect us to be big players was outfield.
Yeah.
Because it's there. He sees it. He knows it. I wouldn't
mind them getting, this is a whole other topic we'll talk about future,
yeah.
A stopgap outfielder.
Well, I think anybody who thinks they're getting Bryce Harper,
that's not happening.
That's not happening.
There's no reason to.
No. And he just.
I shouldn't say no reason.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say.
I mean, it would be great to have him. But when you see what you have and what you need,
right.
You don't do that
it's
necessarily.
It's not a position of need.
Yeah, yeah. But we wouldn't mind having
it. But I'll take Bryce Harper. I'm not, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's going to be a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of the White Sox, checking with free ATMs from coast to coast. Go to the special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hawk Harrelson.
Thanks, our Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast is over.